You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, May 1st, Labor Day, or Loyalty Day. And this is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks on a Michael Monday. We're broadcasting steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Big Waz, Wozni Lambre, formerly of ESPN True Hoop, and all-around commentator and analyst. We're talking all of the latest news in the world of Trump, in the world of chaos we're in. Republicans' latest failure to pass a ghoulish health care bill. Donald Trump, maybe, according to Reince Priebus, they might be thinking about, I don't know, revising the First Amendment. That's something they're thinking about as Donald Trump continues to give unhinged TV interviews and invites the Philippines' strongman Duterte to the White House, even as his drug war is costing hundreds, if not thousands, of lives. Turkey, Erdogan, another Trump favorite, fresh off of ramming through a referendum to give himself more power, is moving against our allies, the Kurds, Kurdish Peshmerga fighters, who are one of our core allies against ISIL in Syria. Climate marches, tens of thousands of people across the country, hundreds of thousands, raging against the president's assault on planet Earth, even as the EPA continues to be silenced on climate science. And today, labor marches across the globe as our new labor secretary gets settled in with a virulently anti-worker agenda. We'll talk about that.
And just to note, you misspoke. It's not Labor Day. It's International Workers' Day.
Excuse me. International Workers' Day. Pardon me. We'll talk about the assault on labor, and we'll go over the eight Vichy Democrats that voted to confirm Trump's labor secretary. German politician and minister Sigmar Gabriel finally breaks the taboo and says it's uncomfortable to meet with Ivanka Trump because she's the product of nepotism and that it's weird to meet with people like her when they're not actual elected officials and there's no actual reason for them being there. All that and more on today's Majority Report. I got to apologize. I don't usually get allergies, but it's hitting me this season. Whew.
Global warming.
Why. Maybe it's global warming.
You it's me
global?
Too.
Do you not usually get them?
Correct.
Yeah. There's something going on.
Someone's unaffected still.
Someone's unaffected. His, that's because his nasal passages were formed in the pure heartland of America. Hey, folks, I want to talk to you about ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. ZipRecruiter has over 9 million resumes, and you can search through. In their database. You can add multiple people to your account, and you can make it the most efficient for your team to find the best hire with ZipRecruiter.com. You can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. ZipRecruiter's handy website shows trending careers, fields, cities, and searches. Find a candidate in any city, industry, or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, hire the right person fast, and if you run into any issues, don't fret. ZipRecruiter's friendly and human Support staff's ready to help. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been featured on Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine, The New York Times, TechCrunch, CBS, and why it's been used by over 1 million listeners, 1 million businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. And one more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Also want to tell you about our old and loyal and amazing friend, Harry's. The razor for the people. That doesn't screw you with markups in the drugstore. I am still in 4 o'clock shadow phase. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to start going clean for the summer. And that's why I want to like, that's a full entrance right there. Why? I've arrived. Waz is in studio with us today. Be very disruptive. I actually miss reading the ad copy with Waz, so I could say, like, hey Waz, you fan of comedy? Not really.
He's a disruptor.
Hey Waz, you shave? Yeah, sort of. What do you think about ZipRecruiter? What? For decades now, the big razor companies have relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of its customers. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix shaving. Such a Bernie product. I love it. Harry's knew that the only way to ensure quality, there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own blade factory. By making less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price. Or just, wait, this cut off at just half, $2 a blade compared to $4 a blade you'll pay at the drugstore. And what I love most about Harry's when I shave is that every other razor that I've ever used, to be honest, just irritates my skin. Harry's does not. It's clean, smooth.
I have a quick editorial.
Yeah, go ahead.
Harry's is interesting because you can use it. I like to use blades multiple times because I'm lazy. And Harry's, they stay sharp for longer.
Yeah, they do.
They actually do.
They last much longer. I mean, I probably rotate more quickly than you, but they do last for a while.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Harry's is so confident that you'll love their blades that they're giving you a free trial set for free. Just cover the $3 shipping. That's insane. Your free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades. We're not laughing at Harry's, we're laughing at Waz. 5 precision engineered blades with lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, and a lathering shave gel. And a travel blade cover. That's a $13 value for you to try. Stop messing around and start shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free offer. 13 value for free. Just cover shipping. To get your free trial set, including razor handle, 5 blade cartridge, and shave gel, go to harrys.com/majority report right now. That's harrys.com/majority report right now. Let's get to this piece of sound really quickly. Or actually, you know what? Let me just tell you about Blue Apron, and then we'll do that sound and set Waz up. All right. Springtime is a great time to hit the reset button and retackle personal goals like getting fit, cleaning, and cooking. Luckily, Blue Apron makes incredible home cooking easy and accessible by delivering seasonal recipes with step-by-step instructions and pre-proportioned ingredients right for your door, all for less than $10 a meal. You can even customize your recipes based on your preferences and select a delivery option that's right for you. Plus, there's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Some of the meals that are available in May include beef teriyaki stir-fry with soup with sugar snap peas and lime rice, baked spinach and egg flatbread with sautéed asparagus and lemon aioli, 3-cheese baby broccoli stromboli with tomato and oregano dipping sauce, crispy salmon and roasted potato salad with pickled mustard seeds and creme fraiche sauce. What? I love every single meal that I've ever had from Blue Apron. It really is ridiculous how good it tastes. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/majority. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/majority. blueapron.com/majority. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. A lot of people don't realize this, but Donald Trump is a keen observer of history. He feels a lot of kinship with Andrew Jackson. And he is not only interested in Andrew Jackson as a historical figure and the comparisons that they've made between each other, he's really interested in, you'll find out from this clip, not only in the details of Andrew Jackson's life, but really in the whys of history. You know, those historical gray zones that anybody who ponders history reflects on. And of course, Donald Trump, with his great intellect, is going to reflect on those. Let's hear Donald Trump echoing Jadakiss, asking why.
They said my campaign is most like, my campaign and win was most like Andrew Jackson.
Right.
With his campaign. And I said, when was Andrew Jackson? It was 1828. That's a long time ago. That's Andrew Jackson. And he had a very, very mean and nasty campaign, because they said this was the meanest and the nastiest. And unfortunately,
his
continues.
Wife died.
His wife died.
Yeah.
They destroyed his wife, and she died. And, you know, he was a swashbuckler.
That's the best. I'm taking your info and pretending I knew it. I've ever heard of my life. His wife died. Destroyed her. Those the liberal media and the Cherokees.
That's
destroyed her.
As naked as you'll see Trump immediately take on someone else's information as if he knew that.
That's why they call it the Trail of Tears, because they were crying about what they did to his wife.
Oh my God. Campaign, because they said this was the meanest and the nastiest. And unfortunately, continues.
His wife died.
His wife died.
Yeah.
They destroyed his wife, and she died. And, you know, he was a swashbuckler, but when his wife died, you know, he visited her grave every day. I visited her grave, actually, because I was in Tennessee.
Oh, that's right. You were in Tennessee.
And it was amazing. The people of Tennessee are amazing people. Well, they love Andrew Jackson. They love Andrew Jackson in Tennessee.
Yeah, he's a fascinating
guy. I mean, had Andrew Jackson been a little bit later, you wouldn't have had the Civil War.
Pause.
He might have killed every single black person in the whole country, and then there wouldn't have been a Civil War. Bada bing, bada boom. Go ahead.
He was a very tough person, but he had a big heart, and he was really angry that he saw what was happening with regard to the Civil War. He said, there's no reason for this. People don't realize, you know, the Civil War,
yeah.
You think about it, why? People don't ask that question. But why was there the Civil War? Why could that one not have been worked out?
There's always, see, when you, the problem with Lincoln is when you see every, when your solution is a hammer, every problem's a nail, the solution's a hammer. And that was the problem with Lincoln, not a deal maker. Perhaps if he had read Art of the Deal, but we'll never know why. All right, we're going to be right back. We're going to set Waz up and we're going to get to it. We'll be right back on the Majority Report. All right, welcome back to the Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks. Joining me now is Wozni Lombre, Big Woz.
Hey, what's going on?
Oh yeah, you got
to. I got to push the talk.
No, no, you should be go under it and see. This is what I meant by getting him set up.
Oh my God!
Flip, just push the button underneath so you don't have to push the talk. Exactly. I don't know.
Give away our secrets.
You good?
There you go. Can
there
you
hear are. Me now? Here he is. He's arrived. The Haitian Charlie Pierce. my
do not
friend.
Smirch Mr. Pierce that way.
My friend. I'll besmirch who I like. My friend. Sorry? You got to get close to the mic. Stop reading the YouTube comments and get in the game.
Hey, YouTube.
So we got a lot of stuff to talk about, obviously. We'll get to. You want us to talk about YouTube? Are we done talking about? Okay, we can keep talking about Andrew Jackson for a minute. Go ahead. You have thoughts on Andrew Jackson?
Well, I just think there's a lot of people that wonder why Lincoln would go to war over that. And, you know, in a certain sense, there's one student thought that the West, it was recently discovered gold, so Lincoln wanted to send a message like, you guys aren't going to leave either. So that's what I'm saying. We need to get to really the historical questions of why. And there's a lot of different interest groups that were involved, and a lot of different, there's a transcontinental railroad to try to lock down the West too. I think the West is important.
So this is the new Trump character, that he's actually like a historical.
Been reading Eric Foner.
Been reading Eric Foner. Got to get into the details of these things. Before we get to everything else, Waz, some people will be thinking, I know that there's overlap in our audience. Some guy actually tweeted me the other day. He said, I discovered you through Big Waz and True Hoop, and now I love you and Majority, and I'm a big lefty. And that was an awesome quote, awesome tweet. This is a bigger conversation than just True Hoop, but basically ESPN is making cuts. They're kind of ongoing themselves. I feel like making another Andres Escobar reference. And they got rid of ESPN True Hoop. And I just, you know, I mean, I have thoughts on this, but I want to, you know, straight from the man himself. What's up? What happened? What's going on? What are they thinking?
It's
like a rounding error to fund a podcast for Disney.
I mean, it was not like there was a lot of funding involved. I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right?
Henry Abbott, who's the founder of True Hoop, he was let go. He got caught up in the cuts whatever you want to call it of last week.
Right.
And True Hoop was his baby. So I guess the thinking was basically Henry's no longer a part of what we're doing, so we're just going to shutter True Hoop as well. It wasn't like, oh, well, you know, they've cultivated this digital audience and, you know, it's relatively cheap to operate. We can actually do something with what they started. It was more so just like, you know, Henry's gone. This is his thing. We're done with that.
We should go into how wide scale were the layoffs for people.
Yeah, give people a sense of help, but I want to get specifically to True Hoop. But yeah, I mean, give a sense of like they let a lot of people go.
A lot of people throughout the company.
They fired a lot of people.
On air people, you know, reporters. They let go a lot of people, and I think it was, you know, to signal to their shareholders that ESPN as a company is tightening its belt.
Right.
You know,
it was about 100 people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So
people thought it was going to be at first 60 to 100, closer to 70, but then it ended up being like 100.
It's just 200. So this is where I think it's relevant for this audience. As I say, there's definitely overlap, but even for people that don't follow sports in this world, True Hoop was, I mean, there were two big plays with True Hoop, as far as I understood it. One was, I mean, you'll always have a base of people across generations that will watch ESPN because they watch sports, and everybody loves sports, or a lot of people love sports. But True Hoop was a distinctly kind of millennial experience. That was on one hand. You had the digital, the millennial, the kind of more, you know, younger focus. Conversely, it was actually one of the only sports platforms. You know, I make the Charlie Pierce comparison, you know, not just to flatter you as a joke, but like people forget that sports journalism actually has a very deep history of people writing about sports and how it reflects entertainment, politics, where we're at in the culture. And you guys had a lot of those conversations.
Yeah.
So you were kind of hitting both bases. You were expanding to a younger, newer demo, but you were also like echoing that, you know, sports journalism, sports commentary isn't just like, you know, run a reel of the best dunks or, you know, how the last night's match happened at the Australian Open. It's also a conversation about, you know, obviously about certainly NBA. It's a conversation about race, but you know what I mean? Like about everything. Everything's on the table through sports.
I mean, Michael, you know me personally, so you know that I have thoughts on things that aren't just limited to sports. And anybody who knows a guy like Pablo Torre or Ethan Sherwood Strauss or Kevin Arnovitz or Amin El Hassan, like these are deeply thoughtful guys.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it was a thoughtful show.
Yeah, these guys aren't just shallow human beings who are just like, oh, I love a slam dunk. It's like, no, they have thoughts and feelings about things that happen in the world, that, you know, the bigger world, so to speak. And a lot of times with sports, you're dealing with things that touch on societal matters, quite frankly. Like, you know, you ban a bunch of Muslims from entering our country. That's going to touch people in the sports realm as well. So a lot of times you got that.
Yeah, not NASCAR. Sorry.
Well, maybe not so much NASCAR.
Yeah, maybe not so much NASCAR.
Maybe not so much NASCAR and golf. Maybe not so much.
Assalamu alaikum.
But yeah, but for something like basketball, where, you know, let's face it, it's mostly minority sport.
Right.
You know, football, same thing. But
right.
Yeah, and we had the space to cover those topics, you know, even under the umbrella of ESPN and under the umbrella of Disney, ultimately. Yeah, that's what we tried to do. We tried to keep it a little bit lighter because, you know, let's face it, there's a lot of podcasts out there that can just provide you with X and O's or just game analysis. But we tried to keep it a little bit lighter, talk on, you know, cultural stuff.
It was more intellectual.
Right.
Which is not, you know, that's not typical.
Because a lot of people want to stick to sports. And you'll see, and I can understand that compulsion to be like, you know what? Let me just stick to what's happening out on the field of play or on the court or whatever the case may be. But yeah, we had the space to touch on different topics, and that's what we try to do. And, you know, oftentimes I would find I'd have a day where I would just went completely opinionated on something, right?
Yes.
Like completely went out there, and I was like, oh, God, maybe I shouldn't have did that. And then people would hit me up on Twitter and be like, no, keep going. We want more of that. So I think that's the type of audience that we were able to cultivate with what we did. But, you know, it's at the end of the day, ESPN is ultimately a business, and they're going to do what's best for the company.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess that's...
Not that this was best for the company.
Yeah, because I don't know that it's the best, because it's like you're talking about an incredibly small investment for a big cultural return. And then you had a couple years ago, you know, they lost Grantland, which was kind of like, you know, something of a similar vein. And then you have, you know, and obviously, you know, and Simmons left, which is a little bit of a different thing. But still, you know, and I guess like as a kind of final thought on this, and I know, I mean... Obviously, you and I are going to be doing more stuff together in like a, you know, a kind of like that specific sense. But what's the kind of play if for that kind of like deeper sports conversation and sports journalism, if, you know, ESPN isn't going to at least, you know, play in those waters anymore for the time being, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because ESPN is such a monster.
Right.
There's so many different voices. Like,
right.
You know, even if like a guy like Stephen A. Smith, whose name came up a bunch this weekend, and people were like, oh, how come Stephen A. Smith gets to stay? And I'm like, guys, Stephen A. Smith makes money for the company.
Right.
Yeah, you know, like at the end of the
day, definitely someone who's
anything,
profitable.
If you wanted to get even deeper, he might be subsidizing some of our favorite people with his ability to draw eyeballs to his show.
Right.
If we're keeping it all the way 100, as the kids say.
Right.
But you have varied voices over there. You have a guy like Dan Le Batard, who I'm a big fan of. He's not afraid to wade into these, you know, these deeper conversations from time to time. But I think the sports industry as a whole, I don't know how equipped everybody is to talk about it.
Right.
You know, again, and I mentioned a guy like Pablo, for instance, who's somebody who's deeply interested in these topics.
Right.
And because of that deep interest, he's able to speak on it in a more eloquent way than most people I feel like in the sports media are equipped to do or equipped to handle. So, you know, that's just what it is. As far as the digital space, you know, the business model is a new one. Not everybody knows how to create an audience the way Majority Report has. ESPN's model is TV. How do we get people to watch TV? That's just what they do. You know, that's what they've always done traditionally. In the future, I think all of this shit's going to be on the internet.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
And it's going to be all seamless across platforms. So
and
even
people are going to have to figure that out.
And people are also going to be, I think, you know, increasingly person and content creator specific versus, you know, channel or platform specific. They're going to be following their people, whoever that may be, and their interests across all these places, and everything will be more seamless, video, web, you know, video, podcasting, and everything else. So I guess it to me, it's, you know, it isn't just like the bias of you know, being friends with you and liking the show. It just seemed like a very, especially for how limited that investment has to have been, a very short-sighted play.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't need to tell your audience, like, if you're on the internet, there's all kinds of rumor and innuendo out there. And, right. You know, whatever. You guys can do what you want with that.
We have the real story. We have documents. Big Waz was apparently was trying to force people to convert to Islam in the hallways. Told people that white people should be banned from the NBA. We have documents. That happens.
Yeah, if
Wanda co-host the spinoff podcast with Minister Farrakhan. We have the documents and we've read all of it. And new ESPN Entertainment instead of Disney said we're not going to do this because it offends President Trump, and that's why you know, liberal media is going to support Waz, but we know what the real deal was.
Yeah, folks. And I'd feel and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the you know, some of the other corners of the internet where the chat is that ESPN is getting its comeuppance for becoming a commie liberal.
Yeah, touch on that. Before we pivot, talk about that. Right.
Which is just completely asinine and dumb. The people who traffic in those kinds of theories are the dummies. And, you know, a few months back, there was this whole conversation about has sports media become too liberal? And I think what you're seeing is that a lot of times the quote-unquote non-liberal takes are just dumb. And that's why they don't get
like
a platform.
Every other part of media.
The idea that ESPN is shuttering something like True Hoop or they're getting rid of 100 people because people are no longer watching their network because they've become too leftist and liberal, it's just dumb.
But also, look, there's three
Brett
ways.
Stevens.
Exactly. There's three ways to talk about sports in generalities, right? Like there's run the highlights, talk about the game, do the stats, whatever. Then there's like the first layer of opening up, like talking about sports in a bigger context. And at the very least, if you're interested in it, it's going to be somewhat liberal because if you're, you know, in a community and empathetic to a community, like you're dealing with race, like you're just going to need to factor those things in. You can't just pretend.
And a lot of journalism is fact based.
And a lot of journalism is fact based.
To be liberal these days.
Yeah.
Well, some of it. Journalism is fact.
Well, I don't know. Okay. That's why I call it the non-fact.
Here we are, everyone.
Look. No, and then like number three, then you get into like Dave Zirin territory where it's like this is a, you know, these are corporate hustles like anything else. And team owners are ripping off taxpayers for stadiums and, you know, the Olympics and the World Cup are, you know, like ruthlessly exploiting developing countries. And in Brazil and South Africa, favelas get run over for soccer fields. I mean, how else, you know, I guess you could do a Bill O'Reilly, like, you know, it used to be that basketball players had to sing the anthem, but now they listen to, you know, Bad and Bougie. What the hell?
Right.
But that's not exactly insightful.
Right. There's a corner of the internet and, you know, the sports consuming internet that will have you believe that liberalism took down ESPN. The bottom line is they've paid a bunch of money out.
Well, here it is from Newsbusters. And explain. Message to imploding ESPN. It's the liberalism. Stupid.
Right. People think that ESPN is losing it's losing its subscriber base because it's too liberal. No, the bottom line is everybody's losing subscribers because people are cutting their cords. And that's just the new reality. And they paid out a bunch of they have a bunch of contracts out there and you know, they owe these sports leagues a lot of money. And if your subscriber base is decreasing, you have to pivot.
Yeah.
And that's what we've seen here.
So it's another example of the technology changing the media environment and then just the imperatives of, you know, corporate ownership impedes journalism.
Always.
So that, like, you know, so actually the lesson is more liberalism. Newsbusters. We need to be publicly subsidized so we can talk about sports
That's
and race
right.
all day.
That's right.
Why hasn't Google been nationalized yet? That's what I'm saying.
Also, ESPN isn't imploding.
ESPN ain't.
They were making a lot of money before. They're making a little bit less than that much.
Sounds like an implosion to me.
I just want to mention that I did a sports thing too this weekend. Or we're talking about
you fired people at ESPN.
What did you go to a Yankee game or something?
Did you go to? Yeah, you went to.
I went to the NFL draft.
Oh, wow. Nice. You were there in person?
No, I went there in my mind while I was meditating. Yes, I went there in person.
Okay.
And Philadelphia was very nice, and people were very excited.
How did you conjure Philadelphia in your mind?
Just, I looked on the internet and looked at some pictures.
Was that the first time you've been to Philadelphia?
No, I realized that I've been to the train station dozens of times, and that I went on a couple of trips during college just to, like, up to Drexel with friends, but that I had never really walked around downtown Philadelphia.
I went to a protest in Philly when I was like 16. That was my last time
I was there. It was nothing like a protest. Yeah. Everyone was wearing jerseys, and that was mostly my impression.
All right, let's get to Jardy Report sports correspondent. I have no idea. There's tech problems here.
You got
today.
Water in the 360.
There's plenty of tech problems here today. Let's get to an interesting, distinct chain of events that happened over the past couple of days. So we know that Trump is, even by his standards, losing what little he had, and in terms of stability, from a mental stability angle, and he has really been amping up. It's almost like, on one hand, as disastrous and as horrific as this 100 days have been, there is some institutions working. The courts are saying, no, you can't have a Muslim ban. No, you can't take money away to punish people for not having sanctuary cities, right? And as this guy's despot plans and fantasies get subverted, and he's just becoming George W. Bush too, except even more stupid, which, by the way, this is why we should not have been whitewashing George Bush when he was out painting and being like, I don't really like the racism. Like, okay, that's an incredibly low bar. His presidency was absolutely horrific and has done everlasting damage to this country in domestic and foreign policy. So, but as Trump deals with that, there are two ways in which his authoritarian fantasies have been playing out. And I want to first play a piece of sound, and then we'll talk about some of his recent interactions with foreign leaders wise. But this is Reince Priebus, or Priebus, on speaking to, is it John Carl on ABC's This Week? And just basically, you know, look first at the tweet that opens this segment. This is, you know, Trump, obviously he's tantruming about the New York Times, but look at what he says. The failing New York Times is a disgrace to the media world, gotten me wrong for two solid years, change libel laws, ? And you're going to see Carl follows up with Reince Priebus here. A lot of people have focused on one aspect of this statement, which is disturbing, but there's actually a far more disturbing aspect of what he's saying that's right out in the open as well. Let's check this out.
Change the libel laws. That would require, as I understand it, a constitutional amendment. Is he really going to pursue that? Is that something he wants to pursue?
I think it's something that we've looked at, and how that gets executed or whether that goes anywhere is a different story. But when you have articles out there that have no basis or fact, and we're sitting here on 24/7 cable companies writing stories about constant contacts with Russia and all these other matters.
Do you think the president should be able to sue the New York Times for stories he doesn't like?
I think that newspapers and news agencies need to be more responsible with how they report the news. I am so tired.
I don't think anybody would disagree with that. It's about whether or not the president should have a right to sue them.
And I already answered the question. I said this is something that is being looked at, but it's something that, as far as how it gets executed, where we go with it, that's another issue.
So everybody's saying, and it's right, that he's saying, okay, the president's thinking about changing libel laws and suing news organizations. But you heard what he said there, right? Jonathan Carl's like, as I understand what you're talking about, and I'm quoting now, that would require, as I understand it, a constitutional amendment. Is he really pursuing that? Is that something he wants to pursue? Priebus, I think it's something we've looked at. How that gets executed or whether or not that goes anywhere is a different story. So you do have within just over 100 days of this administration, the chief of staff who has been framed in the media, and this is another thing that pisses me off so much with these stories about whether it's Ivanka or even Priebus, that there are supposedly these people around him that are slightly responsible and won't indulge his every impulse. And this is the, you know, mainstream Republican chief of staff, quote unquote, out there on TV telling Carl on ABC News that they're at least looking into changing the First Amendment. Now, probably what that means is he has a tantrum and they're like, all right, we'll call some lawyers and we'll see if we can overturn the founding of the United States. But that is fucking extraordinary.
Right. Yeah, it's like it's like anything else that Trump does, isn't it? You know, we'll look into healthcare. we'll look into
getting rid of the Constitution.
We'll look into tax policy.
Who had any idea that getting rid of the First Amendment would be so complicated?
Yes, we'll look into funding the government. We'll look into it.
You can tell how genuine right-wing concerns about freedom of speech are when they spend all their time on Berkeley, college kids at Berkeley, and not this actually, like, we're going to take a constitutional, like, hacksaw to the First Amendment.
Again, constitutional conservatives, they voted for this, so, you know.
They're fundamentalists.
But isn't that amazing, though, that just even the way this has been mostly reported, and Josh Marshall actually pointed this out, like, this has been primarily reported, and it's disturbing enough that, like, the president's sitting around all day thinking about how to sue the New York Times. But the actual answer is we're playing with the concept of amending the First Amendment.
Right.
And as Matt says, this is from the same people that, you know, the country's done because some kids at Berkeley don't want to host Ann Coulter.
Right.
That's the end of free speech.
She's got no platforms.
Right.
It's not like she's not a part of the conservative gravy train.
Right.
Like the books, if we're calling them that. Or like my man Charles Pierce would say, a book-like product.
A book-like
You
product.
Know, like nobody's actually stopping this woman from doing what she does anyway. But, you know, it's like, again, it's like everything else. They asked him on the campaign trail, they were like, wait, so you wouldn't take nuclear weapons off the table? And he's like, nothing's off the table. It's just, that's how he actually answers all of these questions.
That's true, but this is a guy who was framed in the media as one of the responsible ones, one of the babysitters.
Oh, Rice Priebus.
Yes,
oh,
this
please.
Is one of the babysitters. And of course,
he's from an empty suit.
Obviously, and from his own job security perspective, what he's doing is saying something that will satisfy one audience, and that audience is the president, who's watching all of this stuff constantly. But, I mean, that is striking. And then, on top of that, we had a couple of weeks ago, he called up Erdogan to praise him and congratulate him for his referendum, which there are questions about just in terms, and that vote might have passed legitimately. Erdogan does have a lot of support in Turkey, and Trump is, in fact, not half the politician that Erdogan is. But that was a referendum to significantly increase his powers and expand an already rapid clampdown of civil society, free press, and human rights in Turkey that has been presided over by Erdogan. Trump congratulated him. Before that, he hosted General Sisi in the White House. Great guy, doing a great job. He's amazing. And now, he has invited President Rodrigo Duterte, the president of the Philippines, who has personally bragged about killing people as a police officer, who is presiding over a war on drugs, which has resulted in thousands in the deaths of countless Filipinos, is quoting from the Washington Post, many of them poor. Thousands have been killed by police and vigilantes since Duterte took office a year ago and vowed to eradicate the Philippines' massive drug problem. Now, I just have to say, every time you hear something like this in a country, whether it be the Philippines, Mexico, Colombia, and us, in fact, every time there's a drug war, this is never like you're not going at the kingpins. Right. Like if you I always tell this story about Cali in Colombia, the Cali cartel, right? In the city of Cali.
I went there.
Oh, wow.
It was dangerous. I had to have an escort.
Wow.
Like not a paid escort, but it was a business trip.
I would protect you. The 360 is not working. Anyways.
breaking news.
Yeah, breaking news. Kelly had an escort in Cali, Colombia.
It was from the Cali government.
This makes it a little awkward because I was going to say something really disturbing. But basically, yeah, you could take it down. So, but the Cali cartel used to partner with right-wing power militaries and vigilante groups to kill homeless people and prostitutes and other so-called undesirables. And they would hang signs in the city that said clean Cali, beautiful Cali, right? So this is much more analogous of what's going on in the Philippines. This isn't like the president is taking on corruption and cartel trafficking. He's using this drug war as a pretense to do social cleansing of poor people. And Trump has invited him to the White House and also earlier praised the drug war. Now, Obama criticized Duterte, and Duterte called him a son of a whore. And Obama canceled their meeting. So isn't this dude's wish fulfillment? We're seeing the phase now where it's like, maybe I can't get rid of the First Amendment. Maybe I can't get revenge on all my enemies. I can't even take poor people's health care away. It's totally unfair. So at least I can hang out with my friends. And if you look at his face when he meets Angela Merkel and how upset he is to have to sit next to her and the excitement that he has to meet with Al-Sisi, this guy Duterte, who actually as of this recording is not even confirmed that he's going to visit the White House.
It's not confirmed that he can get a visa from the State Department. It's not confirmed.
Yes. Because he's like in the middle of violating human rights. Anyways, thoughts?
It's like everything else with this guy. It's the same patterns, right? You I remember those days when they were like, oh, you know, Trump, the office is going to be so serious. The weight of the office is going to change this guy. The only foreign leaders he's ever praised are guys like Putin.
Right.
Guys like Erdogan. And this Filipino guy.
And now she's my new best friend.
You know, Merkel is that's not the type of person, that's not the type of leadership that he appreciates.
Now, first of all, she's a two. Right. Secondly,
if you're not a strong man, if you haven't actually killed people and dissidents, Trump's probably not a fan of yours.
Right. And I think that this goes back to another point that was made a couple months ago, because Trump had that interview, which this one was actually pretty funny. And I think we might have even played it when you were on, where he basically was, he wouldn't get cornered on, like, is there a qualitative difference between us and Russia? And the host is like, well, Putin kills people. And Trump's like, oh, you think we're so innocent? And I have to admit, like, there was a part of me that was like, all right, like, I'm with Trump on this one, right? Because we do, like, the global U.S. body count from supporting coups to death squads to, you know, every imaginable human rights abuse that comes from running a global empire, right? Like, we've done it. But the point was, and Jeet here made this point, was like, when Noam Chomsky says that the United States commits global war crimes, it's to say, like, we shouldn't do that. Right. What he's saying is, like, we should be open about it and we should stop making such a big deal. And I think that does have, like, it actually matters culturally. Yeah. You know, it's not as important as actually not doing it, but that registers globally where it's like, well, we don't even need to pretend.
Well,
we don't even need to confirm. Like, a human rights report is not even going to matter from the State Department, because the person who does that is going to get fired anyways. And the best way to earn the public support and approval of the President of the United States is to give his family, like, a merchandising deal and kill people.
Right. I think what Trump is trying to say there, too, in his Vladimir Putin defense, it can't be that bad because we do it.
Right.
Rather than, you know, we do this thing that we're not very proud of. It's like, how bad could it be? We get to do it.
Right.
Right? So, like, Putin's just doing what we do. So it's completely fine. And the weird thing is, it's like, if you're somebody running for public office in that party, you can't ever be seen to be making America look not completely perfect.
Right.
And so this guy goes out of his way to defend Putin in such a way that he's even willing to denigrate America to do so.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think it says all you need to know about him. When Chomsky does it, those same people would be like, oh, he's a traitor. He's a commie traitor bastard.
He's a commie traitor bastard, exactly.
It's sad.
It's sad.
It's sad.
It's totally unfair. Before we get to the fun half, I do just want to note, because it is, what is the correct term, Matt?
International Workers' Day.
International Workers' Day. Very shameful of me as a socialist to not know the proper name of that. And I look forward to your tweets. Maybe your IMs, but I can't. This mouse is not working to open up the IMs. So maybe we'll look at it in the break. But
oh my gosh, what's happening?
I don't know. It's a bad tech day. But I just want to touch on this briefly because this got very little attention. A couple of days ago, so we know that the CEO of Carl's Jr., Andy Pudzer, he had to withdraw as Trump's labor secretary. And of course, it wasn't because he said that machines are better employees than people, and it wasn't because he doesn't believe in the minimum wage, and it wasn't because Carl's Jr. has endless labor violations and worker abuses. Those are all pluses for any labor secretary in a Republican administration. It was probably because of stories from his ex-wife and generally probably personally being a scumbag. So that was the one that the administration was willing to personally sacrifice. And then he was replaced, incredibly low-key replacement, by a guy named Alexander Acosta, who's a long-term Republican bureaucrat and worker. And he was Trump's fill-in. Several Democrats voted to confirm him, several Vichy Democrats, including Heidi Heitkamp. Thanks, Matt. Including Joe Manchin. Where is this list? I had this list just in front of me. Can you look that up, Matt? There were 8 Democrats that voted for to confirm, Acosta, but I don't have it in front of me anymore. Anyways, I just want to briefly review what he is committed to doing and what these Democrats knew he was committed to doing before he was confirmed. You got him?
Yeah.
Here are the Democrats that voted to confirm Acosta.
Masto, Heitkamp, Manchin, McCaskill, Menendez, Nelson, Tester, Warner, and Angus King as well.
Okay, so these are the Vichy Democrats. And I'm going to quote now from the Progressive. In his confirmation hearings, Acosta made it clear that he will largely defer to Donald Trump, saying he will openly follow his direction on an agenda that includes slashing worker health and safety and job training, repealing overtime protections for up to 13 million people, and rolling back fiduciary rules designed to protect workers and retirees from investment advisors' conflicts of interest. That means when you go to your investment advisor, they're supposed to actually give you investment advice that benefits you.
Wow,
versus,
that's crazy.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so nanny state.
Pay somebody to do a job for you and they actually do it?
Well, you know what the next phase of this stuff is people like investment advisors saying not lying to you, making it illegal to lie to you or have a conflict of interest in their investment advice is going to be a violation of their First Amendment rights. And I'm sure that that's a First Amendment right that the administration is not looking into relaxing. Already, even without a labor secretary, Trump has wielded executive acts on a number of worker protections by freezing the Labor Department's regulation pipeline. Trump has prevented RITL rules like silica exposure protections from being finalized and enforced. And its new death on the job report, the ACLU states that in delaying the enforcement will allow continued exposure to high silica levels that OSHA's own estimates will result in workers' deaths. Trump has also used executive fiat to delay enforcement of beryllium exposure protections despite support for these standards by both labor and industry. Acosta refused to support basic worker protections during his hearings and instead issued deft blend of pro-worker platitudes and deflections. So even in this environment, even 100 days in, let's read out those 8 Democrats again, full names. Joe Manchin, John Tester,
Heidi
Heitkamp, Matt's favorite senator, Angus King, who is an independent who caucuses with Democrats, Mark Warner, Robert Menendez, Claire McCaskill, Bill Nelson, and was it Masdo? John Tester, oh, Mark Waterweese.
Yeah, and Mastow.
What's Mastow's first name?
Catherine Cortez.
And Catherine Cortez Mastow. So even after 100 days of Muslim ban, endless assaults, and that's really Trump, all he's done, is he got Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, which is a one-man war on labor protections anyways, and then he's just issued a bunch of executive orders to repeal environmental protections and hurt workers. And these morons still felt it was necessary to cross over to vote for Acosta. I mean, this is why I wrote that piece on how not to be resistance. I mean, at this point, and we'll get to this more in the front half, but it's like, when do we just have to acknowledge that even if we're practically going to vote for Democrats and support them because that's practical reality, I mean, that's just a toxic brand. And if I was Bernie, I would never join that party.
Right.
Ever.
I want to know who these people are actually gaining political capital with by voting for this guy. Like, just to be seen as, oh, I'm supporting our president's labor pick?
Well, like, I think some of them still have this weird Sunday morning camaraderie attitude, which they're still trying to apply with Trump. And then I think guys like Mark Warner, I don't know the specifics, but they're not pro-worker.
Right.
They're corporatists.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're corporatists who understand that maybe you should protect a few birds and they don't hate gay people.
Right.
And that's better than wanting to destroy all birds and hating gay people.
Right.
But that ain't progressive.
No.
That ain't where the country needs to go.
My sense is that Heitkamp, because of the Gorsuch thing, that helped her politically because of North Dakota.
Okay. I see. But there you have it. The war on labor unabated on International Workers' Day.
It's just telling that a Democrat can actually be seen to be anti-labor and to them, they look at that as a plus.
And there is no Republican left in that party
that could vote for
a pro-choice Supreme Court justice at this point, right? Like, and this is the thing. This is why extremism is the only strategy. Like, it's both right on the merits, and it's the only strategy that will work in contemporary politics. Because this too clever by half, like, oh, what you do is you migrate to the center, and then you take their popular issues, and you guard yours, and then you win over the center. It's like the center doesn't exist. The center is basically just low-information voters that migrate to wherever they see the most intensity or whatever whims they're on.
Right.
Just because someone says they're independent actually usually means they know less. Not that they're like some sophisticated, savvy consumer of some type of intricate voting profile.
I think the decision usually isn't that hard to require that.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And you see it with somebody like Hillary Clinton, who on the merits is a more pro-labor candidate than Donald Trump.
Right.
But with a certain kind of voter, they're put off by the hypocrisy of it all.
And also, and again, let's be real, like, she's okay.
Right.
And
no.
Horrific.
Yeah, that's but what I'm saying, right? How, like, they justify it is they say, well, at least with Donald Trump, what you see is what you get. Hillary Clinton is a Wall Street flack, and she's coming out here talking about how pro-labor she is.
Right.
And people can justify voting for somebody who literally steals money from regular workers.
Literally does that. I love stealing money from regular workers. All right, we got to go to the fun half. Waz is going to stay with us. We got a lot more sound to get to. We have the first police murder of a 15-year-old black child of the spring. So we'll touch on that.
That's fun.
And we have also some news from Syria and Kurdistan. And we're going to touch on this budget agreement, which I have to say, Democrats are in their sweet spot, which is letting Republicans be completely incompetent and fail when they try to govern. That's the only time where Democrats know what they're doing. If they could just sort of stay out of the way of that, they kind of win. Become a member of the Majority Report today. Subscribe to Dope Boys in a Podcast. Fresh one dropping tomorrow. The phone lines are on. There's a ton of calls lined up. We're going to try to see if we can figure out the IMs in the break. If we can, I'll let you know. If we can't, I'm sorry. 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. We'll try to get to all of you. See you in the fun half.